This is Louis Gadima, author of Bullseye Marketing, How to Grow Your Business Faster, and you are listening to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Hello and welcome to this hopefully short-lived series that will be airing in addition to the weekly Marketing Book podcast interviews. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal during this unusual time is to reconnect you with past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, share some ideas and inspiration, and maybe a much-needed laugh or two. I've interviewed over 200 authors on the show, and my plan is to continue this series until I either run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first. A word of warning, the host and guest may very likely be drinking cocktails during these conversations. I mean, come on. They are recorded during the cocktail hour. To find the show notes for each episode with pictures of each guest and links mentioned in their conversation, visit marketingbookcocktails.com. marketingbookcocktails.com. See what I did there? And if you'd like to join the conversation, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com, and I'll try to include it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat.
Louis Gadima, welcome to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. Cheers!
Hello, Douglas. Great to be with you again. Always fun to talk with you.
Well, thanks. And what's going on in your quarantined world?
Well, you may hear a helicopter go over now and then. There's a demonstration going on at the police headquarters in Newton, Mass. That's about, I don't know, half a mile to a mile from my house. You know, we kind of have not just a quarantine, we kind of have three crises going on at the same time. So,
we've got the protests.
Yeah, we've got the economic crisis, the public health crisis, and the civil rights crisis.
So all we can do is just drink.
There's a few other things we can do, but
yes, absolutely. But that's what you and I are doing right now. So you're in
exactly.
Newton, Massachusetts, and before we go too much further, I need to let folks know that you were on episode 193 of the Marketing Book Podcast, and last week I published episode 281, so that was September of 2018. So for folks who haven't listened to that episode and don't know about your book, Bullseye Marketing, tell them who you are and what you do.
So I am a fractional VP or fractional head of marketing and marketing strategist. I've been working in marketing for 30 years or so and had my own agency, award-winning marketing agency that did a lot of work for big companies like IBM and the Boston Globe, did millions of dollars of work with IBM. Had a successful exit about 10 years ago, and now I do consulting, and as I said, around marketing strategy, and I act as a fractional VP of marketing. And the Bullseye Marketing book and the whole Bullseye Marketing framework really came out of that work that I was doing with companies when I realized that what was supposed to be working, what everybody was talking about, and what was getting all the buzz actually didn't have much impact in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And those were things like social media and content marketing and such. And that there were other things that companies needed to do in the short term and build out to those, that those were more branding and awareness long-term plays. And so that's where the three phases of the Bullseye Marketing approach came together for me.
And I loved your book. And I remember when I interviewed you, I said, we are making some changes because it's such a great prioritization that I have fully adopted. And I've gone on to make presentations. And of course, I tell them, I take this from you. You're like one of those authors that has been traveling with me quite a bit, Louis. I take you on these trips with me. And we can talk about the book, but there's so much more to Louis Gadima. You know, I feel like you're holding back. You know, people don't know that you are a big time poker player. I mean, you win money at casinos playing poker. I almost wonder if they don't want you showing up.
I might use that in the past tense. I've won money at casinos. I don't know the next time I'll be going into a casino. they are not, let's say it's a virus-rich environment.
Yes. And when you say virus, you're talking about a real live virus. So actually, yeah, we talked the other day, you actually, when you found out this whole pandemic was happening, didn't you go to a casino like one last time?
I did. So it was my birthday, March 11th, and I figured I was not going to be able to play live poker again for a while. At the time, they were saying, you know, weeks, but, you know, that was really just breaking it to us gently. And so for my birthday, I went over to the Encore Casino in Boston, and I played in a tournament and came in fourth, which was, you know, in the money. And then went out to dinner with my wife at a very nice restaurant in Boston with the several hundred dollars that I had won.
Mm-hmm. And then you were out of the money.
And at that point, from then on, you know, no more live poker. But I have played more online poker, which I used to hate. But it's the only, it's you might say the only game in town. But yeah. You know what I realized is that it's very much like marketing. Because they both combine strategy, psychology, and data. And so there's kind of a big overlap of skills between the two of them.
I think I smell another book.
Yes.
You've got... You see, I'm full of ideas, Louis, that I don't have to implement, so I'm just warning you. But, you know, I'm always looking for guests, and that was that the bullseye was such a great concept. Now maybe there's the poker approach.
Right, the poker marketer.
Yes.
But, you know, before we go too far, I have to give a shout out to you because one of the things I do in Boston is I head up a group called Sales and Marketing Innovators, and we do monthly breakfasts. Where we have great speakers, and now we can't do that because you don't want to get dozens of people sitting shoulder to shoulder in a room.
You have great speakers, and that's about to change.
And you have, and so we've gone virtual like every other organization has, and what it's done is opened up the opportunity both for speakers outside of the Boston area and people attending from outside of the Boston area, and you're going to be on... On, I believe it's June 17th.
June 18th.
June 18th. Okay.
Now, wait a minute. Let's make sure we got that right here. It's going to be on 1 week from when this publishes. Is it June 18th?
It is going to be.
Yeah, June 18th.
June 18th. So, June 18th at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And we are really looking forward to having you. And thank you so much for doing that.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I've been working on a presentation that I was going to give at in Columbus, Ohio in May, and that whole at Interact Ohio on the campus of Ohio State, which I'm sorry I have to mention that because I know you're a Michigan grad. But
the Ohio
State. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Get it right. They will drum you out of town if
yes,
you leave out.
I may go back there next May, and I'll have it right. But I was supposed to go there and I was preparing this, so I'm thinking, oh great, well I can bring it to life. And it's basically about what I think are the arguably the five most important ideas from the first 275 books on the Marketing Book Podcast. And the reason I'm doing that is because, now I'm talking to you, listener. Originally, I wanted to talk for 90 minutes about the book Bullseye Marketing by Louis Gadima. And even Louis Gadima said, Douglas, thank you. Don't get me wrong, but no, don't do that. Don't do that to people.
Because I didn't think you could do justice in under 3 hours, but so
of course
so we're doing the five greatest ideas from 250 books.
Yeah.
So, listeners, if you want to join us and hear Douglas share his wisdom, go to meetup.com and look up Sales and Marketing Innovators, and you will find that session coming up on June 18th.
Great. And I'm also going to include a link to that at this episode's show notes at marketingbookcocktails.com. So,
great.
But enough about me, Louis Gadima. Let's get back to Louis Gadima. So, big time poker player. Did you learn to play poker growing up on a farm in Illinois?
I did not. The game back then was five card stud, which we did played a little bit, but not too much. The poker thing started, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago. There were some guys around Newton, where I live, who were doing a friendly game, and they were doing these dealer choice games. And do you play cards, Douglas?
No, I don't. I should.
Okay. Well, dealer choice games in these casual games tend to be all these really weird, funny little things that have like incalculable odds and a ton of luck and such. And I lost a lot of money for the first 3 or 4 weeks. And then I thought, maybe I should like actually learn something about this so I'm not such a fish. And so then I started to read a little bit about, you know, how poker odds worked and how you shouldn't play really bad hands from the beginning and things like that. And then I discovered, you know, that Hold'em was kind of the, Texas Hold'em was the current big game and started to play it and enjoyed it a lot. I have a game at my house, a monthly game at my house started to go to some of the casinos and such. And it just kind of, you know, went from there. So I'm a decent player. With everything, Douglas, you can go from terrible to good pretty easily with just a bit of effort.
Look at my podcast. Yeah.
and then you go from good to very good, you know, with a bit sustained more effort. That last 5 or 10%, that's really tough.
Oh.
That's where the heavy lifting comes in. And, you know, I'm not going to put myself into that rarefied category.
Interesting. Well, I don't know. I was recently watching Downton Abbey, which is a show I like. I've watched it before, but I'm watching it again. It's like comfort food for me.
Because of your royal background.
That's right. My English background. Who knows?
Yeah.
I just think it's just so well done. The acting, I think I'm appreciating it even more the second time. But there's in the show, one of the seasons, there's a card shark who shows up, and it once again kind of scared me off from doing that. So I don't know.
Well, there is a saying in poker that if you sit down at a game and you don't know who the fish is, it's you.
Yeah. So I would assume that would be my case. So now, Louis, I'm sorry, but I just got to go back to this this Michigan thing. Okay.
You do.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with Michigan and Michigan football. And so, as I may have asked you in the past, you know, you were in Michigan, you were in Boston. Tom Brady, quarterback for the Patriots, Michigan grad. So you guys clearly, you know, hung out a lot at all the alumni parties. And what I'm wondering about is, has he asked you to help him move to Tampa?
Well, Tom and I are really tight.
And your wives are friends.
You know, I can't tell you the number of times that he's been at our house and everything. But actually, he had Gronk do all the moving for him.
Oh, he didn't want to get out again.
I got a bad back.
He'd already kind of imposed on you all the years showing up and eating all your pizza. Yeah.
Right. Boston has had an amazing sports run in the last 20 years. And he's been a key part of that. And it's just my daughter, who's 26, has grown up with this and has, you know, not experienced the tragic side of life.
It's like how our friends in Cleveland or
Boston in 80
my college, we haven't had a winning season since fall of 81. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Boston Red Sox did not win a World Series for 86 years. Now, you know, it's what, 4 in the last 15 years?
Yeah. So a few asterisks thrown in. Yeah.
All right, we won't go there.
Well, and the Astros too. The Astros, they have an asterisk. Yeah, no, I kid because I like all those games. Yeah.
So she hasn't had that kind of tragic losing it in the bottom of the ninth kind of youth.
And as a father, you want her to experience that.
No, actually, I'm fine. Yeah. She'll get beat up in other ways by life. She can have she's become a big sports fan. So she was in New York doing event marketing, experience marketing for Nike when this all started.
Mm-hmm.
And so how the quarantine, since that's part of the title of this, happened for us is that we had planned on the weekend of March 21st to go to New York. We had tickets to see the Celtics versus the Nets and the Broadway revival of West Side Story. And so we had a great weekend planned, and about 10 days before then.
Well, now, wait a minute. You were also going to be flush with cash from your birthday winnings at the casino.
Totally. About 10 days before that, the NBA season closed, the Broadway season closed, and Nike stopped doing events. And so we went down on the 14th instead. We drove down, spent probably less than half an hour in the city, picked her up and brought her home. And so she's been with us for the last 2.5 months, which has been very, very nice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, and if any of your listeners are looking for a really crack event marketer, I know one.
Oh, wow.
I can recommend.
Yes. And if they're not looking for an event marketer, my daughter just graduated from college, and for some reason she wants to go into marketing now. You know, obviously the example set by her father wasn't enough to dissuade her. And she said, "Dad, you're talking to all these people every day." I mean, you know, Louie, help me out, brother. No, I'm kidding. She's going to do just fine. She's one of those people that makes things happen for herself. So very, not worried about her at all. Probably like your daughter.
Yeah, she's very resourceful.
Yeah, and one of those, you know, I think she's here. She probably hears me. But I don't have to worry because she doesn't listen to this marketing book podcast. Louie, we've got to talk about Bullseye Marketing, because it really is one of my favorite books. And did I hear right that you're working on a second edition of that?
I think working would be an exaggeration at this point. I definitely feel like I should do a second edition. You know, the world of marketing changes so rapidly, Douglas.
Yeah.
And even things that I wrote 2 or 3 years ago, I look back on now and say, yeah, I could use a little bit of an update, or you know, there's a few things I left out that might be useful to people. So I should do a second edition. I have not really started the hard work of doing that yet. You know, there's so much online poker to be played.
Yes, it's true. And there's whatever that wine is you're drinking there, it looks very, very nice.
It's Montepulciano d'Abruzzo.
Ah.
My favorite varietal. And I'm not very particular about, you know, which vineyard or which winery. I like them all. I like it a lot. It's funny. So my wife is the beer drinker in the house. I'm actually kind of a cheap date. It doesn't take a lot, you know, like one glass of wine and I'm fine. Maybe two for the evening.
Kind of obvious already, but go ahead.
Yeah. And my wife has a beer, sometimes two, every evening right after work. And so when we go, and she also is one of these people with the kind of metabolism where she never puts, literally has not put on a pound since we met more than 30 years ago.
Wow. You married
well. I cannot say the same for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll go out back when that was a thing that people did. And at a restaurant, and she'll order you know, burger and fries and a beer, and I'll have a salad and a glass of wine. And they will always switch the orders. Because we defy gender stereotypes.
Okay. Well, you know, Louie, in your defense, you can just say, honey, there's more to love.
she's fine.
Yeah, I tried that with my wife over the years and it did not work. There's so many things I've tried with her that just didn't work. I mean, not even the first time. I'll give you an example. One is, my wife has over the years, we've been married for, I guess, coming up on 29 years, and she alleges that I'm not always listening to her, you know, and she alleges that I snore. So, you know.
And she says, you listen to all those people on the podcast.
Right. Well, so she says, were you not listening to me? Did you not hear? And I remember the first time years ago, I said, I'm sorry. I was in the field artillery in the Army, and I think it really affected my hip. That did not work, not even the first time I tried it.
Yeah. Well, that was a nice try.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's not about failing, Louis. It's about getting up after you've failed. So I know a lot about that. But anyway, okay. Bullseye Marketing, can you explain the concept of it? Because I first discovered this, and not just because my agency's name is Artillery. I loved it. I loved it for a variety of reasons. Because one was we were doing sort of the backward approach, where we're going from the outer rings to the inner rings, and it just brought together so many ideas from other books that, you know, I've been talking about your book. Explain this idea of bullseye marketing, and it's not just some theory you came up with. You saw what happened after working with so many different companies.
Yeah, so the idea of bullseye marketing is that you know, I was, as I said, there were some things that were getting a lot of buzz, and I was finding they weren't working for clients. And at the same time, I realized that there were things that they needed to do that were foundational, that hadn't been done. So, for example, clients that I would start to work with didn't necessarily have deep understandings of their customers. They had, you know, in the center of the bullseye, companies take advantage of what I call their marketing assets. And those are things like their customers, their website, their email marketing lists, and so forth. Things that are just like laying there that they can start to take advantage of very quickly and inexpensively and start to produce some results, you know, really quickly
with
in a matter of
much higher conversion rates. They already know you. They like you.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, better understanding of your customers, selling more to your customers, having better messaging, a better website that has conversion calls to action, using email marketing, which is like costs nothing, like $10 or $20 a month to use an email marketing platform to send out email to thousands of people, and remarketing and a few other things like that that are just really inexpensive, really well-targeted, and produce those results quickly. In the second ring of the bullseye, you start to expand into people, customers who are looking to buy now. And this is where you use intent data. And that's using Google Ads or third-party intent data and other types of intent data to try to identify who's in market now. Because in most markets, unless you're selling something that, you know, people use every day, like food, or web conferencing, in most markets, companies and individuals, maybe only 5% of the market is really planning to buy now or very soon. And so you need to be very efficient and identify them.
Louis, could that also be like bottom of the funnel leads, people that the sales team's already engaged with?
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's not as much of a marketing issue at that point if sales is engaged. And, you know, marketing may have some things to do to help close a deal, creating the right content or things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
But probably at that point, it's more of a sales matter than a marketing one.
Right.
And then in the outer ring of the bullseye, the third phase are these long-term branding and awareness programs, which are social media, content marketing, display ads, events, things of that sort, which are really valuable in the long run, but they're not going to have any impact probably for 6 to 12 months at a minimum. But companies, when they're not doing marketing well and they decide, you know, it's time for us to start upping our marketing game, they start in the outer ring, like you were saying.
Oh, guilty, yeah. Well, and we're kind of in the outer ring business, and that's where, and that's where companies would come to us and say, you know, that, well, they didn't know to say, you know, the outer ring, but they'd say, we need that stuff. And after reading your book and a few other, you know, bloody noses, we said, no, wait a minute, no, we'll do that. But first, are you doing everything you can to market to your current customers? And the approximately 100% of the time is no. Okay. Well, let's start with that. So, thank you.
Oh, totally. I mean, almost every time I start to work with a new, whether it's a startup or an SMB, which is mostly what I'm working with now, and I say, you know, how big is your email list? And I'll say, yeah, it's 5,000, you know, 8,000, 15, 20, whatever it may be.
Not bad.
And I say, how often do you send emails? And they'll say, you know, around the holidays.
Whenever we have a coronavirus outbreak.
Yeah, exactly. When we want to send an email that says, you know, we're here for you. and yet they should be sending emails, you know, ideally the best B2B marketers are sending them a couple times a week. The, you know, B2C companies like Postmates or Edible Arrangements or 1-800-Flowers, they send emails every day. Because I heard the CMO of Vistaprint a few years ago, and he said, we send emails every day. I know we're not supposed to do that, but we've tested it, and that's what works the best.
But you know what? I bet they're not bad emails. I mean, are they?
You know, from Vistaprint or 1-800-Flowers, they're almost all today's offer.
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, sometimes, though, I think people, when we talk to them about, you know, like let's say they never send emails to their customers. And they're thinking, maybe they've said this to you, that, well, we don't want to spam our customers. And I have to explain, well, you want to send a good email. I mean, it has to be helpful or educational, or maybe there is a good offer on there. But it's the sort of thing where if it's really working well, people would say, hey, what happened to those emails from, you know, whatever. I get emails from certain companies all the time, but I like what they're offering, and it's not just about buy, buy, buy. It might be something that's helpful.
Well, let me tell you two stories. So, I mean, the bottom line is what I usually say in my talks and webinars is email more than you're comfortable with. But what I did for about 3 years, a little before I wrote the book, a little bit of an overlap with the writing of the book, but I used to send out a daily email marketing tip every morning at 7:30 a.m. And first of all, it produced a lot of work for me until it started to, you know, that particular effort, you know, kind of got exhausted after 3 years or so. But I had
About how to do email marketing better?
It was a tip about all sorts of marketing. Sometimes it was a tip about something that was happening in the marketing world.
Oh, okay. It wasn't just about email marketing. It was email,
no.
About marketing.
It was about the whole range of marketing. Sometimes it would be a story about, Amazon has acquired Whole Foods. You know, what does that mean for their marketing? You know, okay. All sorts of things. I would have so many people come up to me at events and thank me for sending those emails, and say, you know, this is how I start my day. I look forward to your email every morning.
There, that so, means it's working.
Exactly. Yeah. So a story from a talk I was giving one time, there was a woman around my age, and I was talking about the email marketing and send it out every day if you're a consumer company. And she raised her hand, and you've probably experienced this, Douglas. Anytime you talk about a technique, someone will raise their hand and say, that wouldn't work for me.
Because they're different.
Right. I wouldn't fall for that. So she raises her hand and she says, I would be really put off if I got an email every day from a company. And then she says, there's a fashion company I really like. They send me an email every day. I don't look at it. But when I want to buy something, then I look through the last 30 and see what's on sale now. And I'm like, well, then it worked. They got a 2-second brand impression every morning.
Yep.
And when you want to buy their product, what they sell, you go to them. So, yeah. So anyway, those are the three phases of bullseye marketing. And let me ask you, have you read a book called How Brands Grow?
No, but I've had some authors mention it.
You should really get the author on your podcast. It's not a new book. It came out about 8 years ago.
British?
Australian.
Oh, yeah.
Byron Sharp, and it's one of the most influential and important marketing books of the last decade. And
okay. Yeah. And came out in 2016. That's not too long ago.
Was it 20? Was it 2016?
Well, I'm looking at one. I'm looking at Amazon here. It says, "Oh, it's the CD." Yeah, maybe it came out a little bit.
I like 2011.
It rings a bell. Well, I'll have to. I'll try to reach out to. Do you know the author?
No, not personally. I mean, he's responsive on Twitter. I was talking. One of the things I do is I mentor startups at MIT. And there is another mentor who had done a lot of consumer marketing work with P&G and Gillette. And I was talking to her 6 months or a year ago, and I said, have you ever heard this book called How Brands Grow? And she said, oh, the Red Book. I was like, the Red Book? She said, yeah, it's a red cover.
I see there's a part two that's in blue.
Yeah, but it's that well known within P&G that it had that nickname of the Red Book.
My goodness.
And when you look at, this is one of these rare books where I had some pretty good pre-publication endorsements, but the pre-publication endorsements in that book are like the CMO of Coca-Cola and P&G. It's like those companies have been working with that group, that institute in Australia for literally decades. And so they have a tremendous amount of empirical marketing results that he talks about in the book.
This looks interesting. Yeah, I'm looking at the table of contents here. Now, just full disclosure, I pass on a lot of books that have the word brand in the title. Not all. David Ocker's been on the show twice, but there are a lot of books about whatever branding is. I don't quite know what that means. And I don't find them all that helpful, but this looks really very strategic.
It's very strategic, and it's not really about, I mean, when he says how brands grow, it's how companies grow.
Yes, I see that. And the same with David Ocker, who's considered the father of modern branding, but it's it's not about logos. It's about business growth. Yeah, I will definitely reach out to this author and see if I might be able to do an interview. I'm interviewing someone tomorrow from Australia, and I interviewed an author from Australia yesterday. So
Australia is hot.
Yes, it really works. Well, when I'm able to interview them, during the cocktail hour, and then it's usually the next morning for them. So,
yeah.
Well, let me ask you just a couple other kind of quarantine questions. Is there anything in this whole experience we've been going through that has surprised you at all?
So first of all, you know, I heard your interview, your quarantine interview conversation with Mark Schaefer, who had COVID.
Mm.
And
he's the king of the Marketing Book Podcast. I don't know if
I know.
And I mean king like Elvis, not like British monarchy.
Yeah, no, I understand. And he, he's going to be on Downton Abbey the next season, I think. And I have been, and my family has been very fortunate. My wife's work is stable. My work has been good. My daughter, you know, as I said, she's been furloughed from the event marketing work. But, you know, we're not, our health has been fine. We're in a comfortable home. We've been very fortunate. I know some people have gone through very tough times.
Yeah.
I think the thing that surprised me the most is how rapidly it has become accepted. So in early March, I sent an email to my clients saying, in 2 or 3 weeks, we're not going to be able to talk about product because this is going to explode.
Wow.
And I read something where someone was saying that psychologically, people don't think in terms of exponential growth. We think in terms of linear growth. And, you know, deaths in the U.S. went from single digits to double digits to triple digits in 3 weeks. And people don't think that way. You know, when they see single digits, they think, oh, it's 5 this week, it'll be 8 next week. You know, it's not a big deal. And I was looking at this and I was like kind of projecting it out with the exponential growth and saying by the middle of March, this is going to become huge, and certainly by the 1st of April. And we didn't talk about product, but by, you know, the middle or end of April, we were having 2 9/11s a week, and people were kind of, well, this is what it is now. And that's what's been most surprising to me, I would say.
The acceptance.
Yeah. That, I mean, if you had gone back, or think of it in other terms. There's a particular senior official who lives in the White House who has said, yeah, 100,000, that's a huge success. If there was a terrorist attack that killed 20 people, we would be going ballistic.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we've accepted this, you know, we've come to accept this, you know, 1,000 a week kind of situation. And, you know, businesses are reopening now as we talk in the first week of June.
Yeah. I went and got a haircut today.
Yeah. Well, thank God for that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we looked like Tom Hanks in Castaway. So it was a community service.
I'm sure your wife was very grateful. So that's the big surprise to me, is that the marketing shutdown, and you and Mark Schaefer were talking right in the heart of it when you talked. I think the marketing shutdown and the change in marketing tone lasted about a month.
Oh.
There's a company in Boston called ProfitWell, which consults to subscription companies on their pricing. And they're terrific. Their CEO spoke at Sales and Marketing Innovators. And I saw a chart that they put out about growth of SaaS companies. And it was showing, you know, strong growth in January and February. And then in March, there was a decline. Not a drop off the table decline, but a definite decline. But by the second week of April, it was trending up again. Now, you know, there's some parts of the economy that have been decimated, you know, hospitality and entertainment and other things like that. And they're in a different world. But, you know, but the ability of people to accept this and try to carry on as much as they economically can has been kind of remarkable to me.
Yes. And it now has me wondering, you know, when you talk about 20 versus 100,000 and you compare linear thinking with exponential thinking,
yeah,
is the human brain just better equipped to understand 20 than 100,000, just like linear versus exponential? In other words, they can understand the idea of a certain number.
I understand completely what you're saying, Douglas, and I think you're right. You know, if you know, you can read the stories of 20 people, mm-hmm. and you can't get your mind around 100,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, last question. What is Louis Gadima doing to entertain himself besides online poker?
And hanging out with my family, which, you know, has been enjoyable.
They've been messaging me during this interview, and they said, can you keep him on the call a little bit longer? So
another thing that I do, which is the exact opposite of poker, is I do a lot of cycling.
Oh.
And where we live, in 10 minutes, I'm out in the country. So I can get on my bike, and in 10 minutes, I am in lovely, rolling, tree-covered roads, New England roads.
Middlesex, right?
Yeah, yeah. And
I just heard this website called Wikipedia, I think it is. Yeah, you're about seven miles west of downtown Boston.
God, you're good.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to check out that Wikipedia thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll include a link to it on the show notes at marketingbookcocktails.com.
If you know downtown Boston, you know, the Beacon Hill and the State House is just about exactly 10 miles from my house. And my wife, who is an avid cyclist also, when she was working in the office there on Beacon Hill, she would cycle every day that she could, 10 miles each way. Which is another way to not gain a pound in 30 years.
Ah, I see. Okay. Yeah. Because I'm looking here. It says notable residents, the Gadimas.
Yes. Yeah.
Right here. Notable people. List of people from Newton, Massachusetts. Okay, great. Well, you know, it's funny. I was a I'm not a cyclist, but I would do spin 3 times a week. I absolutely love doing an hour spin. The gym closed, the club closed, and, you know, so I ordered one. I had to order one for my home. A month later, it showed up, and I am back on it, and I am slowly getting back into it, and I'm loving life. So just one more thing to be grateful for, as I
good,
we've got it pretty easy. And I see Louis C.K. is from Newton, yes, and Matt Damon, yes, there it is. Okay,
there's a good number. John
Krasinski from The Office,
right?
Matt LeBlanc, Joey on Friends, and Amy Poehler, wow, and. Current residence, Louis Gadima. Okay, wow. Jeez, I should have brought my A game here. Well, listen,
before we wrap up, let me ask you something.
Before you ask, those charges were dropped, okay?
Okay. Now, how are you doing, and how has this affected you?
Wow, well, I'm not used to answering these kinds of questions. I think I'm doing okay. I guess maybe I'm kind of resilient. I have to say, though, I did have... On March 18th, I had shoulder surgery, rotator cuff. Mm. The Boston Red Sox, they wanted me to have that procedure done so that so that I'd be able to say I had it, so I would sound like a major league pitcher.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, the next day, they said, all right, no more surgeries. I think it was the last elective surgery. So I was sort of in the house, you know, with my arm in a sling, taking painkillers. I mean, if we could just be totally transparent, I said, I need to talk to my authors. So I started this. I sent an email to you and, gosh, hundreds of authors. And within an hour, 100 responded back and said, Douglas, I said, hey, what do you think about doing this, you know, series? Over 100 said, I'm in. And quite a number said, Douglas, I'm already drinking. And I can't go anywhere, so it's not a problem. So, and meanwhile, my daughter, who is a senior in college, she came home for spring break, and they said, don't come back, and mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. So, and in the meantime, everybody left the office, so long story short, I'm letting the lease go.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, well, you know, didn't know what was ahead, and so after 16 years in a really cool office space, I just said, all right, well. Let's just keep doing this. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to take all this change in stride, and I'm trying to have some fun, which I'm definitely doing, talking to the authors. But enough about me. One last thing about Bullseye Marketing. Last week, I interviewed an author from the Boston area, David Merriman Scott, and he wrote The New Rules of Marketing PR, and he wrote that. And he published the first edition the same year the iPhone came out, which I think was 2007. I interviewed him about the 7th edition. Why does he have 7 editions? Well, it's a very popular book, but it's for the exact same reason that you just mentioned. Things keep changing. And that's why I think that you should think about getting that second one. I don't know, you know, how else were and all that, but it's... You know, it seems like each edition that you would do every few years, he does a new edition like every 3 years now.
Yeah.
No, he takes old chapters out. He has to put new chapters in. And it's really just interesting to see what's there. So I would encourage you to do that, even if, you know, I thought it was such a great concept. And it was one of those books where I was reading and I was just thinking, God, I thought I was taking crazy pills. And because there's so many companies that are doing it sort of the wrong way.
Well, David was actually a client of mine 20 years ago when I had my agency, the company he was VP of marketing at, NewsEdge.
Yeah,
they were a client, and so back around 2002, when there was what we thought was a bad crash, we didn't know what a bad crash was like then. Yeah. We were young and naive. But anyway, in those days, if I got a call from a VP of marketing, it was much more likely that they were saying to me that they had been laid off and did I know anyone who was hiring than that they were saying, we have some more work for you. And I would get together with these, you know, now former clients, including David, for lunch. And they were all writing books. But David had been a novelist. he'd written, I think, two novels.
Oh, and so he had, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you can get them anymore. I don't think they're available. And so he had the writer discipline. He had the motion and you know, he knew how to do it. And so he actually wrote a book, and a very good one. And it, you know, changed his life, and it changed marketing.
Wow. Interesting. And I remember him saying that he, you know, didn't do well in writing in college, and they said, you know, you're never going to make it. And just one more author who sort of said, yeah, I'll show you. But
yeah, exactly. We all have those stories, right? The chip on the shoulder stories. Tom Brady has that.
Yes.
You know, he was one of the last people drafted out of college that year.
Yes. And I'm so glad that we can add some symmetry to this conversation and bring it all the way back to Tom Brady, Michigan grad. So,
absolutely.
Well, Louis Gadima, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you here on Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. And I'm really looking forward to getting together with sales and marketing innovators in Boston on June 18th. And I hope that everyone who's listening, who's interested, will sign up for that.
I am looking forward to having that conversation with you then. And it's been a pleasure, as always, talking with you, Douglas.